Welcome to the 4Jack Podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Season 6 on the 4Jack Podcast, powered by our friends over at Galvin Green. Galvin Green is the number one technical golf apparel brand preferred on every professional tour. They're famous for designing high-tech, elevated golf apparel for every golfer, male or female, to feel invincible under all conditions. Head over to galvingreen.com and get your apparel game dialed in for the fall season. A massive thank you to our community that continues to support and share in our success. Throughout Season 6, you can expect more untold stories, more amazing guests, and a deeper dive into how golf truly impacts, connects, and is celebrated by many. Truly excited for this interview tonight, and I can proudly say I followed this group for almost 18 holes at LACC this past summer before they put their finishing touches on what we expect to be one of multiple major championships. And before we check in with tonight's special guest, we have another surprise in store. I have a celebrity co-host tonight to help me carry this one home, and I'm sure you can even add some color commentary on a special putter that may have assisted this team to their U.S. Open victory. Mr. Johnny Wonder, what's going on, sir?
It's an honor to be here. Celebrity is a very generous term. I would say more golf schmuck guy. But we have a big show. We have somebody that's had a real nice year. Him and his player have had a real nice year. So I'm excited to get into this conversation or interrogation, as you call it. But it's a lot to talk about. Let's just get into it. That's all. That's what I'd like to do. Just start. Push
it's
play.
It's a big day. So without further ado, we won't hold it back any further. The 4Jack Podcast is extremely excited to host a standout mini tour player in his own right. And he actually had a couple of upset victories on the Can Tour over close friends of mine. So we might have to get into that a little bit. He ended up hanging up the clubs to coach collegiate and is now living out the dream, or at least we'll get some insight from him, caddying for Wyndham Clark on the PGA Tour. It gives me great pleasure to welcome to our show, Mr. John Ellis.
Thanks for having me, boys. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely.
I can't wait to hear about who I upset, by the way. Wasn't I the favorite? I'm supposed to be the favorite.
You were the favorite that year, but I think Andrew Parr and maybe Wes Heffernan have something to say about that.
Yeah, they were really good, actually. I may have got lucky.
I think Wes is still beating up on half the PGA of Canada pros.
Yeah.
I think he won is. Something recently this summer. So anyway,
Is the Canadian tour, they still play that primarily in Mexico, Florida, and Arizona? Because that's just a great tour.
Yeah, that's mostly Manitoba, Saskatchewan, and Minnesota, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I took one down in Mazatlan, by the way, on the Canadian tour. So it travels everywhere.
That was a three-peat year, I think. You had three victories. You had TELUS Edmonton Open, which I played in. You had Mazatlan. You had something in the U.S., maybe?
Yes, Stockton.
Okay.
Yeah. Wow.
The good old days. You remember those days? The McDonald's tour?
What happened?
I don't know what happened. PJ Tour needs to rethink that process.
Yeah, right?
All right, Johnny, you want to get into it? Let's get into it. This is a big, big news day. So what can you tell us? And especially because you're in Toronto right now, there's a big incident in Toronto today.
Yeah, that whole thing at the border was, I mean, I'm not going to dig into
bizarre.
That. I'm kind of staying away from that whole thing because, you know, the moment that anything like that happens, it's like half news and then half conspiracy theories and it's so stupid. But yes, we do have some news. And the cool thing about the way golf media is right now is like, it's dominating the news cycle, but nobody knows if it's true. The numbers are elevated. You know, the thought of like, if this is true, what would it look like? If it's not, who cares? Like, but I can say that everything that I know about what's going on with who's my favorite player on tour is Jon Rahm, is everything that you know that you see have seen on X and whatever the hell it's called, or Twitter. That's what I know. You know, besides the rumblings that, you know, John or myself or whatever might hear from player to player, essentially nobody has that smoking gun answer. Like, yeah, it's happening. I think the only person that really kind of flew off the top turnbuckle today was Phil when he jumped on Alan Shipnuck. I don't know if you guys saw that, but that was it was unbelievable.
I did just see that. Yeah, I did just see that.
But it's an interesting thing to think about. I mean, I can add, I mean, I'm sure John can too, but I mean, add some color as to why I think John would make a move like that. You know, in his case, theoretically, not risking as much as he could have risked a couple of years ago. I think the runway is a lot longer than it was. And he's one of those names that if he leaves, it does shift the balance of power rather quickly, even though he's not Tiger or anything like that. But he would be the heaviest domino to fall, and other potential dominoes might follow him going that way if that was the case. So it'll be interesting to see what happens.
John, you got to weigh in on this, man. You're sort of an ear to the ground, right from the horse-ish. So,
well,
what do you think?
Yeah, I'm not on Twitter or X or whatever, but I've been sure following through Instagram, hearing the rumblings, and trying to figure out through my sources too. Listen, nobody wants John Rahm to leave the PGA Tour. Do I blame him if he did for the money that we're hearing? How do you not turn it down, right? Obviously, he's always said he's not going to. He's got enough money to do whatever he wants in life, so he doesn't need the money per se. But when you're getting, you know, we'll say it $500 million, there's 500 million reasons why you could easily go. He's still going to be in the best tournaments every year. You know, I know he's doesn't agree with how Liv does the 3 days and stuff like that. And that's the only smoke I kind of get from this. Like, if he does have a say in like, hey, I want 4 days and maybe the team thinks 3 days, and then I could see some of it. But I still think John wants to play 4-round tournaments. I think he wants to have a cut and challenge himself against the best players in the world. And I'm not saying Liv doesn't have the best players in the world, but top to bottom, the PGA Tour is way better. And I see him trying to build his legacy. And I'm hoping I'm right. I don't know. I have no idea, but I want him to build a legacy like the rival Tigers or Stevies. And I don't think he does that. If he plays on a Live Tour, I guess there's always a chance they merge. But if it stayed the way it is, I want him to follow in the footsteps of Seve, is to be the best Spaniard, one of the best European players ever. And if he wins Live Saudi Arabia, I don't think you become the greatest European Tour player.
It's kind of cementing his legacy right now. I mean, he's on a great trajectory, but generational wealth. I mean, how do you say no to that? That's a guarantee. There's no injury worries. There's no, you know, you buy what you want, you live how you want, and you decide to play golf today, you decide to play golf today.
You also got to take into consideration, and this is the answer I wish a lot of those guys would have given when they all signed the first time. And like at the time, Bryson had the best answer, saying it was a business decision, right? Like, he was on the path to a really kick-ass answer. But what they should have said, and I think one person actually finally said this, was like, I don't want to play when I'm 40.
Yeah.
Like, I have the opportunity to play until like, and I, if you offer Rahm, say anywhere between 2 and 500 million, like we'll just kind of normalize the number. He wants, you know, he's got kids and he likes being a dad, and he likes, you know, he's still a young guy. He's not, you know, he's not even 30 yet, but you know, he might be at that point. He's like, you know what? I want to play hard until I'm 36. And that's it. And if I want to play six times a year, I want to play. And that's a real answer. Like, dude, I don't want to play. I don't want to be Stuart Sink. I don't want to be doing 35 tournaments when I'm, you know, 47 trying to, you know. And that's some guys, that was kind of the old way, but I don't think a lot of these young guys care about it that much. And another thing that I think the tour sort of took for granted is, and this is me speaking, so, you know, John, you can call this out too. These kids care about the cups, the FedEx Cup playoffs, and the majors. They don't like these legacy events, like Memorial, like they care about the money of those attached to those events, but they don't dream about winning, you know, Bay Hill, or like they don't give a shit about those. That's my perception. I don't think they really care about winning those. So you can't use it, if you're the PGA Tour, you can't use it as like, well, God, you're not going to, you know, you're not going to be able to play at Bay Hill, and then you're going to miss out on Memorial. Like, most of the players don't like the Memorial ball. I mean, if you went at Memorial, you balled out. It's not because you just love the golf course, because you played your ass off. You know what I mean? So,
and I feel like each player has their own little, like John would be devastated probably not to play Phoenix Open. I mean, he might not hate the coward, you know, the whole thing. But, you know, I know for Brooks, you know, he's been on record saying like, God, I'd love to play Phoenix and maybe a couple of, I'd love to play the players and maybe another one. But then the truth is they're all the same. Like, I hate saying that. Like, they're all good tournaments. And they want to win and play well, but there's the certain tournaments where you're like, I want to just go there and play, and that's a special place. The only argument I make with the LIV, when you said it's like, oh, you only want to play 12 tournament, 14 tournaments. The LIV, you have to play them all. So you have to play those 14 tournaments they have. He's going to play the four majors, so that's 18 tournaments. The way the new PGA Tour is set up, he only has to play in 8 tournaments, or he doesn't have to play in 7 elevated events, or I don't know what the name is now. So that's where the only argument of that is, like, you can't miss LIV events. You can't be like, I'm going to pull out because I'm not feeling well. You sign that contract, you're playing those 14 events.
They want their money out of it. Yeah, they want their money out of it, for sure.
If Rom or like Rory's not playing, you know, Hawaii, or I mean, that's their choice. They don't have to play in those. So that's where the only thing this new year where, I mean, guys could play 8 tournaments if they wanted to and argue, they're not going to get the $300 million. But John Rom's kids are probably pretty safe based on what he's made so far in his career.
I mean,
you know,
they were gonna be. I mean, that's the thing. Also, is like, and I can even say this about Wyndham if he stays, keeps doing what he's doing. I mean, is he, you know, worth $500 million? No, but like, you know, his family's set. Like, he's gonna be he's gonna be fine, right? Most of these guys that are playing at a high level, if you want a major, if you're not a complete idiot with your money, like, you're cool. Like, you know, I speak to that, like the Jimmy Walkers of the world. Like, he won the PGA Championship, won a few tournaments. He's cool, dude. Like, his kids are fine. He's no worries. Like, he's got his pension. Like, he's doing. He'll be fine. Everybody in that family's gonna be fine. So, it's not necessarily the fear of being poor or the fear of running out of money. I think a lot of it is, you know, for some of these kids, it's just making sure they get every bit of juice out of their career that they possibly can. And money is part of that, but you know, they're all little, and you could attest to this, John. And maybe Wyndham's a little older, and you know, how old's Wyndham now? 31, 32?
He's gonna turn 30 in 2 weeks.
Okay, so they're all like little corporations, like, you know what I mean? They're all like little corporations in their own right, and you know, they have things that they want to check off in their career, and they all kind of want to check off the same ones. And you know, what I think John would be giving up if he went to LIV theoretically, you know, because there could be a monumental shift in the game if he changes, you know, who the hell knows how the market's going to react to that. It's just his John Rahm Corporation checklist that he had for his career when he was 25, that little list that he wanted to check off. He might have to erase a couple of those, but I think that's probably the worst that would happen. He's also added $400 million to it. I just changed the number again.
Yeah, the landscape has changed multiple times here. But at the end of the day, it's like, are you a purist? Are you chasing that legacy? Do you want to have trophies? Do you want to be compared against? Or do you want to go have fun? And then, like football, like baseball, your career ends at, you know, your 6th or 8th year, NHL, for example.
Yeah.
And then you go on to do something else. You go into real estate or whatever the hell else you want to do, but you have the freedom to do so.
Right.
Well, with all that money, you don't need to do real estate or anything else. Count your money.
Exactly.
No.
New Mazda in the driveway every year, you know, no worries about that. Snow tires in Minnesota if you're up there hanging out. No stress.
Just brand new snow tires every year.
Brand new snow tires.
Yeah. Recycle. Yeah, give me the good ones.
John, where are you these days? Where are you hanging your hat? It looks like you're somewhere.
I'm in Minnesota. Yeah.
Okay, that's home base.
The cold tundra of Minnesota. California to Minnesota.
Where in Minnesota are you?
Wyzetta. Out west, I'm on Lake Minnetonka. Pretty lucky, but yeah.
Oh, dude, you're over by you're over by Hazeltine. That's where Rocky still. That's where Rocky used to live, right there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Beauty.
Mm-hmm. That's 15 minutes from us. Yeah.
That's so much fun. Gotcha. So,
pretty good spot for 7 of the months. There's these 5 months that we're about to get into right now.
You're packing up to go somewhere warm right away.
Yeah, you're right. Next week. By the way, they opened golf courses up today. I got a tee time, and it was supposed to be 42. The golf course had been closed because we got snow. A few golf courses opened up, and I got a tee time, and it was supposed to be like 45 and sunny, and it turned out to be 38, and nobody went golfing with me, so I didn't play. But I was all jazzed the day before Thanksgiving. That's rare here.
The Canadians would be rolling in their graves.
I know. They'd be ready.
Are you heading to you're heading to Bahamas here pretty soon, right?
Yeah, Monday. Yeah, Monday morning.
So can
early.
I? So I want to say something about John's player, because I met Wyndham in 2018 for when I was at WRX. That's when I met him the first time. So like, it's been fun to watch his evolution. But when he came out of college, he was, you know, I would say he probably underachieved his first, you know, 4 years from the expectations he had coming out of Oregon. But and you know, John sees it every day. But like, you know, if I was going to rank impressive people to watch in a practice round, like Wyndham would be in the top five. I don't think people truly realize how hard he hits it, but two, how talented he is. I mean, it's like, he's just the tip of the iceberg for that kid. If he just continues to, that's why I'm, you know, excited he's playing in the Bahamas. Cause I think exposure to being like, no, I play in that every year. I play in this every year. I'm part of that little top tier ecosystem. I think that's only going to make him better. Cause I think that's where he thinks he belongs anyway.
He always thought he belonged there. To your point, did he underachieve? Surely. I mean, I came out thinking, yeah, this kid's going to be a world beater. I think in his development, though, I think it was hard for him to believe and really trust. Like, God, I'm really good. Like, he knew it, because in practice rounds, guys would be in awe. Like, how are you not winning every tournament? And I think that hurt him. Like, you hear how good you are. You're supposed to do this. You know, I hate the word talented, because everybody on the PGA Tour is talented and can do certain things. But so it's like a word that just bothers me a little bit, because, you know, you could say that about Wyndham, like, he's so talented. But the guy who finished 120th is talented. He just, in a different way. Wyndham had the skill set and the length to be a world beater. And I think, obviously, the world's starting to see it a little bit, because you don't hit it 325 and his best attribute is his chipping and putting. It's usually like, oh, that guy hits it far, but he can't chip it on the green, or his putting's not very good. So, you know, I think this year playing consistently better and getting himself up there just kind of gave him the belief to do it.
What clicked?
Yeah, I think.
What clicked before the Wells Fargo? Sorry, Johnny, didn't interrupt you there. But something was trending, right?
Yeah, but if you looked at it, like, I did a few interviews afterwards. If you looked at it from the beginning of the year, Palm Springs, all the way through, if you dove into his stats and how he was doing, he had been playing great. Maybe Sundays he wasn't playing as well, or maybe it was Saturdays. There's always a little round or a nine-hole stretch where you know, I think he got tight or maybe uncomfortable with where he was. What clicked at Wells Fargo? You know, I think, you know, it's been stated quite a bit. Julie, a sports psychologist, you know, made like little goals and like a plan to win each day, right? I like saying that word. Just, you don't win in golf. Like, you lose all the time. And whether you shoot 75 or 62 or somebody always beats you. But if you could do the little things like walk off the golf course with shooting 71 and be like, you know what, I did this well, my attitude was good, all right, I'm good for the day, let's go on. Where maybe in the years past it's like, I mean, that putt on 17 or the 3-iron that I hit right, you know, it's always dwelling on the negative or what should have been, instead of all right. And I think all those little tools kind of led to what he did on Wells Fargo, because he was a different person coming down the stretch. He didn't flinch. That Saturday playing with Xander shooting 63 and
it's Xander
and was incredible on that golf course where guys were shooting, playing well and shooting 71. To think those two shot 63, 64 is incredible. And then the hardest thing in golf is, one, you haven't won a golf tournament, and then you just shot you know, your second career low, and you got to find a way to take down, you know, the fourth best player in the world and try to win your tournament after shooting 63. That's just hard to do. And, you know, after the first tee shot, he was incredible. So,
yeah, it's an interesting, you know, when you watch these kids come up, you know, there's, and believe it or not, there's players on tour that, cause I always felt like to be elite, like an elite tour player, you're already elite if you make it on tour, but to be, we'll call it the top 30, you have to love the grind when you suck. Like, you know what I mean? Like, and
you're right.
I think a lot of these kids come out of college. And this isn't a critique or a criticism. I think it's just kind of how it is. Like, it's going to be interesting to watch Gordon Sargent come out, because he's been pounding everybody's face in for so long.
Yeah.
To see, and I used grace. How much grace can you show when you are not the guy anymore? Like, you're going to have your accolades as the, you know, the Jack Nicklaus guy, and you get some awards in college, but ultimately you're out there with guys that at any given day could beat your face in. And can you continue to evolve and learn how to play? This is my point is, I think they come out a lot and they say, oh, I'm a superstar. I have to play superstar golf, which essentially is trying to play perfect golf and not make any mistakes. And they kind of live and die with how they hit it and how impressive they think they are at that point. And I think, what, you know, if I'm using Wyndham as the prototype, I started to see him, because he was struggling a little bit when we walked with Sam and those guys in the Phoenix Open a couple of years ago. He was kind of in the middle of something, right? And then I saw him, I think it was a week or two before Wells Fargo, and I don't know him that well, but I'll always say hi to him and shit like that. But you could tell, like, his shoulders are kind of dropped, you know. He wasn't like all pumped up. Like, he was just kind of like, and, you know, he's at work, man. Like, I'm just at work, and today I'm a little scrappy and tomorrow I might be the stud, but whatever. And he went off and won. And I swear to God, dude, I saw you guys at the US Open on like Tuesday or Wednesday on the driving range, and the vibe was unbelievable. You could just see it. Like, the vibe was like, we're here, man. It's really major. And watching him on TV, dude, you could just see he was completely, completely comfortable being in that scenario.
Yeah.
There was no.
He was at peace with himself. You're so right about this, because he would walk around, and you're also right about these studs coming out. Like, you come out and call these college kids are incredible, but the best players still beat your brains in, week out. Like, Gordon Sargent's still in the thump most of the college kids all the time. And then you come out there like, I'm supposed to do this again. And it's like,
Take a seat, rookie.
Doesn't work like that. Tiger's done it. Ludberg's actually done it. Second best of anybody. And the kid's unbelievable.
He's nasty.
But I tell the story. Like, Wyndham won the U.S. Open. He played incredible. But he was at peace with whatever was going to happen. Like, he was like, I'm playing pretty well. I could play this golf course. I could beat these guys. I just won
big tournament
a month ago against the best players. Like, there's no reason why I can't win, you know,
on a ridiculous golf course. Cause Quail Hollow is like, that is just golf course is, talk about love, hate relationship with the players. Like, if you've won, if you won there, you love it. If you haven't won there, it's the biggest piece of shit you're playing.
Well, if I was making a schedule, I said, I think it was an elevated event and whatnot, but I was like, I think we should skip it. He played like shit every time. And, but I'm glad I was wrong.
Exactly. He won't go to you for advice on the schedule.
Those days are over.
You just pick up the bag and do what you're told.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that week in LA. Like, I mean, was there a vibe early on? Johnny said you guys were feeling good. He was at peace, but was there any inklings? Did you guys just go out there and have, you know, a strategy in place? A lot of guys were bitching about the golf course, and I thought it was awesome.
I thought it was awesome too. We have a good buddy who plays there quite often. Wyndham flew out there Tuesday and Wednesday before. Wyndham texted me. I was like, how's the course this night? He's like, we're going to win the US Open. And I was like, that was kind of sweet. So you want me to show up Tuesday, Wednesday? When do you want me to show up? And but I say that, like, he felt so comfortable with the golf course, where to hit it, where not to hit it, what clubs to hit. You know, usually we, spend the first day like, do I hit this or here? Do we push it down there? There's basically one hole where maybe we change what we were going to do. And so the game plan was set. He felt comfortable with every tee shot. I say this too, like, he was at peace. Like, he was so calm that week. Even Sunday, I'm like, maybe the last three holes were the only time when he made the bogey on 15, the par three, where I was like, he seemed ramped up. I get it. I see why. But the whole week he was just like, all right, let's go. Let's go do what we're going to do. So it's incredible.
Is it nice?
The thing, The thing I was going to say is it's like it's hard for somebody like Wyndham that's hitting. All he knows is how to hit the type of shots that win tournaments like that, right? Like those are the shots. Yeah. He hits these big, hard cuts and these, you know, he hits it straight up in the air and he can work the ball. He can do anything he wants with a golf ball. And when you get in those situations, when you're young and you're not exposed to it a lot, you're like, well, this is what I do. Like, how am I just not doing my thing? And I think, you know, I can relate it back to like what I see with Sam Burns right now. Sam Burns is going to go on a heater at some point, win a couple of majors, because he's in that Wyndham Clark kind of similar situation where he's like, he knows how good he is, but he hasn't realized how good he is because he hasn't done it in a major yet. And, you know, you could see Wyndham sort of go through that. I would say Friday, Saturday at the Open is when I really saw, like, you know, his back get up a little bit, like, oh shit, no, this is exactly where I'm supposed to be.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
You could
he didn't flinch.
No, you could tell by how he was walking, you know, he was calm, you know, he wasn't flying off the tee, chasing his ball down, trying to figure out where it was at. Yeah. And, you know, it's like, and that's what a lot of those kids, you know, do when they're, especially in a big scenario like that, you know, it's like, they're just so anxious to get to the next moment as opposed to just like, no, this is my job, man. This is what I'm doing. Yeah. Like, I feed my family. So I'm going to walk, take my time.
Who was more nervous? Was it you or was it him?
I mean, I was pretty calm too. Like, your nervousness comes from your player, right? If I sense he's nervous, then I have to do something to calm him down. And frankly, I really didn't get nervous until, you know, maybe 16. And I wasn't necessarily nervous. I was like, all right, what do I have to tell him to get him to just do what he's been doing, right? And I could tell he was getting jumpy. He was asking me questions and, you know, stuff when you're, you know, why is that cloud going up? You know, like little things where you're like, his mind's really racing, you know, like 17, he's just going down the fairway after he hit a, you know, a poor second shot. And I reminded him, you know, it's actually in a good spot. And, you know, you're the best chipper. And he's like, well, I'm going to get this in the hole and this and that. I'm like, you'll be fine. And it's just what you have to do, right? Like you're going through it. And so I didn't really get nervous. It was just, trying to feed off his energy a little bit.
And you've played in
some games. When guys are playing well, it's hard to get, I mean, not hard to get nervous, but, you know, I always say the first few years caddying for him when he was struggling, trying to keep your card, it's like, that's when you're nervous. Like, when he's in all these good shots and I'm just saying, oh, great shot or good shot. Oh, wow, that was incredible. And it's like, all right, there's not much you could do, right?
Yeah, what an experience though, man. Like, you know, I get to see it obviously with the Callaway staff. So, you know, it is cool when you see people that you know or you're friendly with, you know, have their moment. It's like, you know, because I don't think anybody, I mean, I've never played professional golf, but you know, you get all the people online and this and that going, I would have done this. I would have done, like, you have no idea how tough that golf course is. And two, like, nobody, and I mean, nobody can explain what it's like to be in that moment unless you're in that moment. Like, you just have no idea. I mean, you're talking about your childhood dreams, your family's dreams, every nickel you borrowed from your old man. I mean, everything is like, every promise you made is literally going to fulfill, is going to get fulfilled here in about, you know, 20 minutes. If I can just keep my shit together, it's a lot, dude.
It's funny. I had to go home to San Jose over the weekend, and I had not watched the coverage, even though I wanted to watch it. So I watched it on Saturday, the final round, and even watching, I'm like, are you sure we win this thing? Like, it gets me, I'm going to get a little teary eyed, but I'm like, do we win this thing? Like, it's Rory. I got all these guys chasing us. Are you sure we win this? And so I'm sitting at home even last week, and I'm like, Brian, like, you know, teary, like, oh my God, I can't believe we won the U.S. Open.
What did you guys do afterwards?
Yeah.
I can't remember a single thing.
No. Good. Blackout after the putt falls, and it was just, chaos.
We got after it. They threw an amazing party in maybe the USGA room, just outside the locker room. I'm sure you went into it. But the best booze, wine, everything was great. So that was maybe 8:30 till 10. And then they say we got to the Hilton and they have dinner from 10 to 12. And we thought it was a smart idea to get bottle service at one of the clubs, to which I don't remember being at that club more than 20 minutes. And my wife says, we got to go. Or I think
what club was it?
I don't remember what it was, but Dustin Johnson, Justin Thomas, a bunch of guys were there. And and I don't remember much of it, but.
Your wife picked you up from lockup on Monday morning? Or
no, she was there. She was there the whole week. She was there with you. Was okay. Yeah. Yeah.
You better hang on to her. That's a special girl.
She's amazing.
Yeah. So how we move forward in the season, and how are we feeling? How do we carry that forward? Is there any like pretentious sort of, oh my God, now we got to carry this, or are we just living the life and we're loving it?
No, he's a hard worker. He wants to be the best player in the world. So I think, you live it up and you're always a US Open champion. I think the hardest thing, for somebody like Wyndham or even a young Sam Burns who's going to win a major, it's like, all right, I did this. Now how do I follow it up? Or am I supposed to win majors now? And then the thing that I want Wyndham to be, or like the goal for what I would want, is to be that hungry kid who's trying to make the FedEx Cup playoffs and make it to the Tour Championship or the top 70 or fight for your card. Right. Like, I know that's bad to say, but you win a major and you're 10th player in the world, you're playing on Ryder Cup, you're just supposed to get there. Right. And golf's not like that. So, my hope for him, he will work his ass off. So I'm not worried about that, but unfortunately you're in this game, you're going to have your peaks and valleys, and he's going to go through a struggle. As I'm not saying he's going to play poorly, just when you're the US Open champion, you're under that microscope where, he hasn't played as well or getting a top five or top 10 like he had been doing. So that's where the next growth in Wyndham Clark is, right? How do you handle the next step of being a major champion, two-time winner? You could argue he could maybe have the third or fourth best year of anybody on the PGA Tour, right? So how do you handle that?
Yeah, it's an interesting thing. You said I guess I'm supposed to win majors. I think literally Rahm said this in an interview. Nobody's supposed to win majors. They're really, really hard to win. Like, that's the thing is, like, the only person that was supposed to win majors and did was Tiger. And that was like, that's, if golf PGA Tour is the Bible, then he's Jesus, right? Like, that's just, he's just that guy. Right. So the thing that, and again, I'm not a PGA Tour player, but like, you almost have to get to that point where it's like, no, I won a major on Sunday and today's Monday. And like, that was yesterday. It's gone. So now I got to start over again. You're constantly every week starting over. And I think, once you get into that mindset, you stop looking at your total year as opposed to just, dealing with this week. And this is a job this week. I'm in Bermuda playing the Butterfield or whatever. And this is like, this is what I'm doing. It's hard though, because, you got FedEx Cup points and you got all these things and the cups and this and that. And I've always felt like the guys that control their mind the best are the ones that you just kind of do their job and, add it all up in the end. It's like, I did all that and it added up to, being number two in the world. And I made the cups and, I made $8 million. So there you go. It's a craft that very few have mastered, I think. So.
Yeah, for sure. So that's the trick.
Let's time travel a little bit, because let's not make this all about Wyndham. Let's make this about you. So let's talk about your introduction to the game and your illustrious career, where you beat up on some friends of mine along the way and, played a little bit, played a couple of US Opens. So who was instrumental in your introduction to the game?
My dad was, actually. We grew up on a little, or my dad and grandpa, but we grew up on a public golf course in San Jose, to where we could open the gate and go play. And my dad used to play in tournaments. And when most kids would sleep in or whatever, I would go caddy for my dad and get up at 5:30 in the morning. He's like, what is wrong with you? And I just wanted to be I wanted to be around golf. Yeah. I couldn't play, or I wasn't playing. And I just loved the competitiveness of golf, and I just like being around it. So that's kind of how I started, and obviously played for a little bit, had some success, wasn't good enough, but I enjoyed competing, and I feel like I get that a little bit with this job, being around Wyndham, right? With he competes, we compete, I compete against him outside of golf, practice rounds, you know, so where you get that little burning edge a little bit still.
Yeah. Are you guys playing a lot? Is there cash games? Like, there's got to be caddy cash games and stuff like that going on.
I don't play in them. I used to bring my clubs a little bit, but I haven't brought my clubs. I brought them to the British Open this year and didn't open the bag, and I said I'll never do it again. And we're playing all these all these good golf courses, but the weather stinks. And yeah, I said I didn't bring it. I was like, that's the last time I'm bringing my clubs. Oops. But I haven't really. I don't play on the road, and I just don't compete as much. I don't want to. I hate to say this, but I don't want to shoot 75, and I'll probably shoot 75, right?
There's a lot of equipment guys out there with deep pockets that are always looking to throw cash around. Isn't that right, Johnny?
He has $100 of mine that I really want to get back, and I haven't had a chance to win it back from him.
Nice.
Send me a putter. You'd think you'd send me a putter. I still don't have the U.S. Open putter in my hand.
Do I need to send you a jailbird? I could get you of all people, I could get you a jailbird probably I could get it to Minnesota probably in 48 hours.
Yeah, I think I probably get one.
I think it's about time. Yeah, I think let me do that for you. Let me help you out on that one. Even though you could probably just text Cody and he'd send you one in 2 seconds. But I want to be the guy.
Yeah, I want it from you because you owe me $100 essentially when you made that bomb at Phoenix. So I want it from you.
You want to hear a funny story, Chris?
Yeah, I do. Absolutely, this is good. I like this.
So I got asked every once in a while. I'd get asked by a player like, "Hey, my caddy, you know, missed this flight or whatever. Can you carry my clubs for 9 holes, right?" So it's me and, you know, Callaway marketing guy just schmucking around and no business being out there, but whatever. So I was carrying for Taylor that day, and he plays this game where it's on every hole, it's $100 a guy, and he'll pick like the most obnoxious putt on the green, and it's $100 make. Everybody's got to pay $100 if you make. So you know, 11, 12, I think Wyndham made one like on 13. So everybody, you know, and it carries over too, I think. So does it carry over, John, or not? It does carry over. No. Okay. No. So he made a couple, I think, and I think Taylor made one. So we're cruising along or whatever. And on 18, you know, I was playing the whole time. So I'm, you know, down, I don't know, a couple $100 or whatever the number is. And so we're on 18 on TPC, the stadium course, and
he's waiting for the crowds. By the way, he's waiting for everybody to be around. Like, anything when there's nobody around.
Yeah. No, I mean, I was that guy for like the first 7 holes, and then I just, the sun shined on me the right way, and I hit like a 60-footer or whatever, made it, and ended up making a couple $100, and that was probably my crown golf achievement in my time with Callaway. So, but John was there to witness it, and I was proud to do it.
Oh, John had to whip out $100.
Whipped out $100. I think I had to Venmo him because I lost all my cash to the everybody else.
Yeah, that's good, man. It's good to have some banter and good to have the guys out there grinding a little bit.
I got to say this out loud though. Like when we lost some serious people to live, like personality wise. Like we lost Gooch, Abe, Leishman,
Pat.
I mean, Stenson. I mean, I lost Charlie Howell, who's a buddy of mine. Like, there's a serious crew that we lost. Phil, like, you know,
do you send guys out there? Like, do you ever go out there or no?
They don't send. I don't understand why. Ping does. Titleist has got a guy out there. Like, Callaway and TaylorMade don't. I was always of the opinion that all the brass, you know, the Chips and the Acushnet, Mr. Acushnet, and you know, they should have all just called each other a mass email and just said, "Hey, look, nobody wants to be the first dog to the bull. We're all going to do it on the same day. We're going to acknowledge Liv. Yeah. We're going to deal with the backlash together. Here we go. And they just never did it. And I think they could have handled that whole situation in 3 days. And at least the very least could have been out there and kept some of those contracts going, because Gooch just made $100 million on Liv. And I'm telling you what, as a marketing guy, I would have loved to have been able to tap that. God.
Yeah.
Give me a break. Anyway, nobody listens to me.
Only sometimes.
John,
I would be doing a disservice to our friends over at Municipal if I wasn't going to ask you about the partnership and sort of how that's evolved and the love from those guys. So tell me a little bit about it.
Municipal is the greatest company to work for. Honestly, the swag and Wahlberg and the whole company has been amazing. It's only going to get better. Mark came to the Ryder Cup. He was one of the first to get the shoes. They're incredible. They're comfortable.
Are you wearing them while you're working?
Yes.
They're ridiculously comfortable. I just got a pair too. Yeah.
And they've been incredible to be part of. We're a part of it moving forward. So I'm very fortunate, very lucky to be part of Municipal and first class. And I feel like it's going to take off like even more so. Like, it's in stores here in Minnesota and
Shields
kicking butt. Yeah, it's kicking ass. So it's been great, and Mark's been awesome.
I haven't been able to get my hands on any Municipal gear yet because of the whole Harry Callaway thing. Like,
do you want some shoes, Johnny? I'll get you some shoes.
I could get. I mean,
maybe when that putter comes.
Yeah, there you go.
Maybe that putter shows up to the house. Maybe it'll be a nice swap.
That putter is going to show up to your house, and it's going to be. I don't like cross favors. I want to just send you the putter and just know that in my back of my head, I got a favor back there. I'm just going to just throw up favors like a squirrel.
There you go. $100 favor. I love it.
Yeah.
Well, should we let him off the hook, Johnny? You got anything else for John?
I do have a testimonial I got to give the guy.
Absolutely.
One, congratulations on just an unbelievable year. I mean, obviously I work for Callaway, but I follow all you guys and anybody I've crossed paths with, walk practice rounds with, and you know, you've always been really kind to me, and so has Wyndham. And you know, I gotta say, man, it's Wyndham's, you know, was the guy hitting the shots, but it's a big win for you and your family. And like, what a year you had, man. Like, what a blast. Yeah.
I mean, life changing, I guess, in a way, like, you know, I got that caddy award, which, you know, not necessarily deserved or whatnot, but to think in 200 years when I'm long gone, you know, my name's going to be up there with some of the other U.S. Open caddies, which is cool. So it's been an amazing ride, and, you know, hopefully it's not over, but regardless, I get to back on what was 2023, you know, year.
Yeah, I mean, you got to say, you know, you got to tell your kids or whoever, you know, when you're a little bit older, that at a certain moment on a certain day in the world, all eyes were on you and your player, and you got that guy across the finish line. I mean, that's like, there's very, 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 very few people that can say that in any sport. And I get excited, super excited for people. And I know that probably meant the world to you. So congratulations again. It's what a great year you guys had.
Well, I appreciate it. And then somebody like that I'm close with too, where, you know, my wife, he's like a son to my wife. He's, you know, family to us. So, you know, I always tell people I care more about Wyndham Clark, the person, the friend, how he is off life, than I do as a golfer. Right. And, I get to be, you know, work under him and fortunate to be part of this ride, but, you know, I root for him off the golf course more than I do on the golf course, which is a pretty cool relationship, which made it why we were crying our little eyes out every time we win. But, you know, it is.
You're in the mud with people, man. You're going to cry if something good happens. I have an idea here, Chris, because John and I have a unique perspective being how close we are to all this stuff. I'm gonna give you my top five. You're gonna take your player out of it.
Yep.
And we're gonna take records out of it. I'm gonna talk about pure ball striking. the quality of the strike. I'm going to give you my top five,
and then just noise.
I'll give you my top five, and then So, and I could say Wyndham. I'm going to leave Wyndham out of it.
We'll leave Wyndham out of it.
Is this Americans only? Or are we talking global?
No, this is just on PGA Tour.
Just players
out there.
That came across the PGA Tour. Because one of my guys isn't on the PGA Tour anymore, but pure striking.
Okay. I'm going to throw Adam Svensson in there. I'm going to throw Emmy Grillo in there. I have to put Taylor Gooch in there. Scottie Scheffler 80% of the time, because sometimes he can catch it a little skanky, but when he does hit it, it's pretty fucking nice. And I would say my fifth would probably be Åberg. Those would be my five, like, got to watch these guys hit it. And I'm talking about irons, like compression, divot, not like driver. It has, if you say anybody but Rory or Wyndham or something like that, you're just not watching.
Doesn't count.
Yeah.
I'll go Sergio Garcia.
Like, yeah, he's nasty.
It's just unbelievable. Like, if the guy putted like you did on 18, he would have 24 majors.
He's kind of, I gotta say one thing really quick on Sergio, because I went and saw him this summer. It's not the same, because before.
Well, yeah.
Okay, but keep going. Sorry, I didn't mean.
Yeah. Well, I was saying at the time, but obviously he's not on the PGA Tour, so he doesn't need to be the same. He's on Liv. You just collect that check.
True.
Adam Scott.
Yeah.
I will put Adam Svensson in there. I played a lot against him. He didn't miss the face ever. And I know he still doesn't miss it. If he putted, I know he's putting better. It's not a knock on his putting, but it's just one of those things where you're just an absolute flusher and you just hit the center of the face every time.
All the time.
It's unbelievable. I've seen Lovberg play. It's incredible to watch him hit iron shots and shots. And then I have one more. I will say Scotty.
Yeah. Okay.
Scotty Scheffler. I love Taylor Gooch. He hits iron shots better than, the way he shapes shots and stuff, but I haven't seen it in a while, so I can't talk about it, but he was incredible.
Yeah. My runners up would be Charlie Howell still hits it incredibly well. Emmy Grillo, like if you look at him, if you put Emmy Grillo on like a foresight or a TrackMan, and like if he hits 50 shots, you know, up and down the bank.
No dispersion.
It's pretty nasty. He's amazing. But what I was going to say about Svenny really quick before we go is he cracked three driver heads this year, but he didn't crack the heads. He cracked the faces, and it was all because he kept hitting it out of them. So he's worn in the face. Yeah.
Wow.
Same spot ever. I mean, and I don't know what it is about Canada and ball striking, but like, because Corey Connors hits it like a freak too.
Yeah.
Yeah, you gotta get my line up here, boys. And I'm disappointed. I'm disappointed.
I couldn't do it.
I'm disappointed. Graham Dillette, come on.
Yeah, I know.
He was an
absolute flusher. Yeah, but he beat me so many times. I was gonna say
source.
Yeah.
Yeah, Corey Connors. Yeah, you threw his name out there, but Hadwin too. I mean, Hadwin, Morikawa, real good ball strikers, but Svenny, he wins for sure.
He just doesn't hit it as like. There's something about. We were just at RSM doing our. That's when we test all the new drivers for next year. Is at RSM.
Yeah.
And he's one of those guys that if a player walks by and he's hitting five and six irons, some of them will stop and be like, "What, Jesus Christ?"
What's
like, because you can hear it. It's like,
sure.
It's just unbelievable. Anyway,
Well, Canadians, have to hit it good. It's freezing. The weather stinks. And if they miss hit the center of the face, they'll never want to play again. So they have to hit the center of the face.
Exactly. When it's minus -5 outside, that feels like you're hitting a rock with a wrench. So
exactly.
Not good.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for having me, guys. I really appreciate it. This was
absolutely
fun.
Continued success.
We win another major and I get to come on again.
100%. The door is always open. And obviously we'll bring Johnny back in and try to find you a putter.
But
I'll DM you my number. You text me your address. I'll get you a putter.
There you go.
All right, I appreciate it. Thanks. All thanks, right. guys.
Pleasure, really man. All the best. Yep. Good luck next week. All right. Take care.
Yep. Thanks.
This next segment of the show is brought to you by our new friends over at Swanee's. Swanee's is here with a fresh take. Performance-based materials are a given these days. But if you're looking for the stretchiest, most lightweight pieces that can deliver a look that says, I'm here for a good time, take a walk on the Swanee side. With fabric sourced from recycled plastics and design sourced from our very own weekend warriors, Swanee's is looking out for both the planet and those that need a little style boost. Premium looks from top to bottom at swanees.co. And if you use ForJack25, you can receive an extra 25% off your purchase at checkout. Enjoy, swanees.com.